So here's a discussion about the union of simcha during the day. Just in the car with Charlie, we were schmoozing a little bit about the challenge which there is on Purim. It's very interesting because every single yontiv, the fact that there's an isur malacha and we can't do malacha, and we have the mice and mitzvahs which we have to do during the yontiv. So the whole avir of yontiv puts us into a place, into a zone, where if we feel and we're excited about yontiv on any level, we can be margish the simchas yontiv. And that's brought out by the nice foods, and even in the gashmias, the way we dress, we see chaverim, we come to shul, we interact with chaverim, it's a beautiful davening. So when we do it right, and we have some appreciation for kedusha, what it means yontiv, so we can tap in, because of the way that Chazal structured the yontiv, into that place of simcha. However, when it comes to Purim, there are many obstacles when it comes to tapping into the simcha of Purim. It doesn't have the avira of a regular yontiv. There's no isur malacha. And that simcha which comes along with the yontiv, it's very difficult to tap into. And one of the reasons for that is because we have to question what exactly is the makor of simcha when it comes to the simcha of Purim. When Chazal speak about the simcha of Purim, are they saying to us, this is like a regular yontiv, treat it that way, tap into that same nekuda from which the simcha of a regular yontiv comes from? Or, and this is l'chora the more logical way, and we can discuss this, is that this is a different type of a simcha. And the nekuda when it comes to Purim and the aspect of simcha, although it seems like it's the biggest challenge, because we don't have that avira which we have on yontiv. We don't dress up. We don't get, although it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that way, to come to shul on Purim dressed in big day Shabbos for yontiv. It's brought down as I, in the yeshivas they for sure do it. I'm curious to see what happens in Ish Kodesh later. But we don't have that same gisha to the yontiv of Purim as a yontiv, because for many people, we were just somewhere and I saw an old chavra. I said to him, so what are you doing for the suda? You should come to my house. He said, no, I'm working tomorrow. So my heart drops. You're working tomorrow on Purim. How could you possibly be working on Purim? Forget about that, which Chazal say, anybody who works on Purim, Einu Roa Simin Bracha. So I'm sure he doesn't know that, because any maimon who reads that Chazal is like, if you work on Purim, Einu Roa Simin Bracha, like, well, why would you do that? Why would you do that? So my heart dropped. And what are you supposed to say to a person like a day before? You surely take off of work and not go tomorrow. You just postulate these things. You know, you have to prepare in advance for these things. But why would a person think that that's okay? Because, you know, doesn't have the tzur v'yantiv. You come to shul, there's no special nigunim, there's no challah. And many people come in their work clothes. And the only thing which is different about the davening in the morning on Purim is that you read the Megillah. But other than that, there's no difference. It's just a regular day davening. You don't say special nigunim, you don't say keser. There's no halal, there's nothing. It's just a kiyas Megillah. So you can go through a whole day Purim. One guy, he could literally be in the Kodesh Kodeshim, and another guy, he can be at work, and he could be crunching numbers. You don't have that extreme when it comes to regular yontiv. Regular yontiv, everybody's in the same room. It's just where you are in the room is going to be different. But everybody knows that there's an Issur Malacha, everybody's dressed appropriately, is going to be singing Zmiros if it's a Shabbos, whatever it is, even if it's a Yontif Suda. Hey, when you're in the Sukkah, you're Magish the Yontif. It just depends on how much you're Magish of the Yontif. But on Purim, the potential for one person being B'mizrach and one person being B'marav is so apparent. And you find that just in regular conversations with people and just how they feel about Purim. One guy could be Mamish, like on fire about Purim, and he can't understand why this guy thinks that Purim is just a regular day in the Jewish calendar. And this guy can't understand why this guy gets so excited about Purim. Because for most people who are chitzonistic people, what's exciting about Purim is the dressing up on Purim. It's the dressing up. It gives it that tzchaik. But is that tzchaik really the same thing as simcha? So what is the nature of the inyan of simcha when it comes to Purim? Of course, this would need time to just address, like, what's the ikr nekuda of what Purim is all about. But I want to share with you first a word from Rav Huttner on the Inyan of Simcha, and to maybe expand upon that a little bit. And again, any time during the course of this shmooz, not a shir, it's a shmooz, feel free to ask questions, to discuss, and to try to work it through so we can make it very nogei lemaisa, because we're really standing at the border here, on the Pesach Hadalas of Purim. So he says the following thing. Every yontif has a mitzvah of simcha, and that simcha warrants basar v'yayin, Gemara says. Ein simcha ela b'basar v'yayin. So if we wanted to approach that from a halachic viewpoint, we would say, okay, there's a din basar v'yayin on Purim. And the din, every single din comes with a shir, how much you should have. So when it comes to eating challah, let's say you should have a kazayis. If you're drinking wine, it should be revius. And a basar would also be, have a kazayis of basar, maybe dugim. There's a sheer simcha nyantif in having basar v'yayin. When it comes to, however, the simcha of Purim, and we know that Purim has a shame yantif, because we say in the Megillah, la'yehudim ha'isa oira v'simcha, and the Gemara makes a drasha, v'simcha zu yantif. So it's not muchrach that it's talking about Purim, but the implication is simcha is yantif, the Purim has a shame yantif. Now says Rav Huttner, look at the tzur of the yantif. You don't find anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch that there's a chiyuv to have basar by the tzur of Purim. There's no chiyuv basar. The Rambam mentions it, so therefore those who are makbid to have basar by the tzur do so because of the Rambam. And it could be even the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, but it's not b'toras halacha, because it doesn't say so in the Gemara. And the shir yayin. So whereas by regular yantiv there's a shir revius, but when it comes to yayim and purim, ain shir. There's no shir. The shir is ad liyada. So if anyone wants to explain based on the following yisur, take a guy who's sick, and he has, let's say, a problem with his arm, chalila, and he goes through a whole clean healing process, and now he feels better, and he wants to make a Suda Soda. So he makes a Suda Soda. And at the Suda Soda, so, of course, he thanks Hashem, and there's a simcha there, and he's grateful for being back. Take another guy, that he's suffering lolinu from depression. And he worked his way through it, and now he's out, and he wants to make a Suda Soda to celebrate where he's come to. And he makes this Suda Soda, and he's very besimcha there. So Futner says, what is the difference between the simcha by the first Suda and the simcha by the second Suda? The difference is that by the first Suda, where the person was suffering from an arm issue, and now he's besimcha to not have to be there anymore. So that simcha is that there's the simcha from feeling better, and there's the arm. So the arm feels better, and the simcha which I'm experiencing are not directly related one to the next. I had a second guy who was in a state of depression, and now he's besimcha. The simcha which he has in the Suda Soda is not just a byproduct of feeling better. The simcha itself is also part of his refuah. Because the depression didn't allow him to be besimcha. And he was at a point now where he can make a celebration, and to celebrate that he's not being depressed, that simcha is a simin to his refuah, and will only intensify the simcha and the refuah which he's having. That the simcha and the refuah are really one. So it's a deep mashal, and he takes us to Purim, and he says the following thing. He says that by every yantif, whatever Yeshua that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, there's a simcha which comes along with that. There's a simcha which comes along with that Yeshua. When it comes to Purim, says Rav Huttner, the simcha itself is the refuah. So therefore, the simcha is not just a byproduct of the Yeshua of the Zman. The simcha is the refuah and the Yeshua itself. That's the nekuda. The nekuda is the inyan of simcha. Where do we see that from? We know that the whole issue of Purim was Haman. And Haman is an Amaleki, and the Torah tells us that Amalek, when they attacked the Yidin, the Torah says, Asher karcha b'derech. And Rashi says, karcha is a lashon kar, which means cold. That Amalek is very happy, and they really don't mind if Jews are doing mitzvahs. That's not the problem. The problem that Amalek has when Yidin are doing mitzvahs is that they're doing it with simcha. So whereas, if you take a look at Mitzrayim and the Shibud of Mitzrayim, the Shibud of Mitzrayim was one that Paro said, Tichbad ha'avoyda la'am. You have to enslave the Jewish people so that they have no time to do Torah mitzvahs. It was a gezerah against doing Torah mitzvahs. That was Paro's focus. Amalek, that's not their focus. Amalek is very fine with Yidin doing Torah mitzvahs, but as long as it's zapped from all of its Yiddishkeit and all of its simcha. That's called Asher Karcha, to cool off a Jew. The thing which scares Amalek most is a Jew who's on fire for Hashem. That he should be simcha in his avodah. Because what is simcha? Simcha is a measure of how much chiyus you're putting into something, which is why simcha is so important in avodah Hashem. Because the difference between a Jew who's besimcha and not besimcha, and I don't mean simcha like chitzonius, you know, like an Anah Nachman truck jumping up and down. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, it could be a simcha which is in the heart, where you can have two people in the shul, in the same shul, one guy over here, even standing next to each other, and it looks like they're doing the same exact thing, but one guy, he feels a chiyus, and that brings him a simcha, and the other guy, he's just cold. And nobody can know. That's something which is completely given over to Hashem. You can't tell from a person's hand motions or the way that he shuckles whether he's truly besimcha or not. Because a simcha is a measure of a person's chayim. What is your life? What do you live by? Is the highlight of your week when you go to the ball game, and that's what brings you joy? Then by definition, then when you're davening, you're going to be zapped of your chiyas, because you can only put your chiyas in one place. Where do you put your chiyas? And it's a very awakening type of a question we have to ask ourselves. There's only one Eitz Chaim in the Gan, right? Everything else is not the Eitz Chaim. There's not multiple Eitz Chaims. There's only one Eitz Chaim. So the person has to ask himself, I'm in the Gan of my life. What is the Eitz Chaim in my life? If it's going for a nice steak dinner, and that's the highlight of my week, and I look back on my week and I say, yeah, you know, I felt good today. I felt good today, or felt it was a good week because I had this meeting, or I had this, that. If I saw this person. So then, that's a person's Eitz Chaim. But if a person's Eitz Chaim is in Ruchnius, and we should be zeichet to that, that means that, you know, everything which we do, we're interacting with Hashem. So if we can make Hashem and Torah Mitzvahs like the real simcha in our lives, that's a gevaldic life. Because that means that when you look back at your week, and it wasn't just because I met that person, or I did that thing, or I took that vacation. I mean, every day is mamish, it's a gevaldic life. What did you do today that was so gevaldic? I davened 3 times today, it was amazing. You mean you saw Hashem 3 times today? Yeah. And I learned something today also. Imagine the chiyus that a person has in his life, because he chooses where to put his Eitz Chaim. And his Eitz Chaim is in Torah Mitzvahs and not in something else. But we have to really look at this straight in the eye and say, I only have one Eitz Chaim, and that Eitz Chaim is going to determine where my Simcha is in my life. And when I make a Torah Mitzvahs, it's not at the expense of anything else, by the way. I want to point this out, because one of the things which really threatens us for making that decision, for dedicating ourselves to that life, is because we feel that if we put Torah mitzvahs as the Eitz Chaim, and all the other luxuries and pleasures in the life which I currently have, it becomes like a threat that it will start to crumble. I'll have to make big changes in my life. But that's not true. You don't have to change your family, or change your house, or to change your job, or to do anything else. Adirabba. Right? It gives you a new perspective of everything. This isn't just my wife. This isn't just my children. This isn't just my home. This is a place that I find Hashem in this. And it gives you a new perspective of this person, of this place, of this job, of this moment. If even Torah mitzvahs, it gives me a new perspective. So Amalek tries to confuse us and to make us think that when we choose the Eitz Chaim over all the Atzei Agan, that it's going to jeopardize my life, and that I may have to like move to Eretz Yisrael now and grow long payas, or do things which I think are uncomfortable, but are people going to think about me? Am I going through a midlife crisis? It's nothing to do with that. Because when it comes to Pnimius, doesn't require that you have to change the chitzonius. Because when you do things in the world of pnimius and everything can stay the same, the only thing which is changing is on the inside. And so now my gisha, my approach to learning and to davening and to my relationships becomes different. And instead of trying to rush through a 45-hour shacharis into 20 minutes, I could be benachas, and I can enjoy it, and I could look back at my day and I say to myself, what did I accomplish this day? I had a really good shacharis, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow's shacharis. Imagine a life like that. It's a big schlep to have to daven 3 times a day when you're not looking forward to it. But imagine if you actually look forward to davening, what a gavaldic life that would be. You know you have to do it anyways. You know you have to do it anyways. And you know you're going to do it tomorrow, because you have to. But imagine if we actually like doing it. It could be done. It can mamish be done. It's shaykh that you should say tachanun on Mondays and Thursdays and actually enjoy it. It's really possible. I had this awakening once when I was in Yeshivas Chavetz Chaim, and there was one of my chaverim, who I'm still very close with, Menachem Axman, St. Louis. So, I remember at the time, there was some type of an excuse, you know, that you could have like patched yourself from like saying tachanun or something like that. So I said, I tapped him on the shoulder and said, Menachem, you don't have to say tachanun today. He's like, no, I like saying this tachanun. I was like, what? You like saying Monday, Thursday, tachanun? It just shook my reality. Could not believe it. I like saying this tachanun. Never forget that. It's possible to like things which we can't imagine. It's very possible. The words of Torah and the osios of Torah are imbued with a chayim. Every letter of Torah is life. And chayim and simcha go hand in hand. Because it's just a measure of where your chayim is. So if this guy's excited about the game, this guy's excited about learning, it's not that this guy's that this. It's not just a matter of like what your personalities are. It's a choice which you made in terms of like where is your Eitz Chaim. Is your Eitz Chaim on the baseball field? Did you plant it on that field, or did you plant it in the base medrash? That's really what it's a matter of. So whereas we think that we have to change everything and it's a big ordeal to like uproot this tree and to plant it again, I don't really know how to do that. It's not about that. It's really about first of all, a ratzon and a conscious decision that even if I can't say it, I'm not ready to say, this is what I'm going to do. But at least it starts with the ratzon that a Jew says, I would really like it to be there. I really like it to be there. And if a person starts to see that over time, that he's losing chias for the baseball game, and he's finding that he's having more chias in Torah, 100% you will not regret it. You will not miss out. Because the sweetness of Torah is so much more. It's not limited. It's not bound by all these things. So getting back to what we were talking about, the Asher Karcha Baderech. So this is the difference between Mitzrayim and Amalek. And just if we could just discuss this just parenthetically, we know that there are two big klipas which stand against Bnei Yisrael. One is called the Shibin Malchios, which is Bavel, Paras and Madai, Yavan and Edom. These are the four Galiyos that Bnei Yisrael go through, which we endure. And there's also the Shiva Amamim, there's the seven nations in Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Canaan. Knani, Chiti, Amori, Pizi, Busi, Vagrigashi. And these are considered to be two separate klipas, which Klal Yisrael has to deal with. And they express themselves in our lives too, although we're not battling the Knanim and the Girgashim. But in our lives, and within ourselves, these are actual spiritual realities which we have to endure, not just as a cloud, but even individuals within the confines of our heart. The head of the Arba Malchios is Mitzrayim. And the head of the Zion Amamin is Amalek. And that's why these are two different approaches on how to trip up a Jew. Mitzrayim says like this, this is Mitzray philosophy. Just make things extremely, extremely hard for them in their lives with all the challenges which they have, so they have no time whatsoever to think about Torah mitzvahs. That's the Mitzrayim philosophy. How would we translate that into normal day life? We would say like this. We would say, make work so difficult and make him so obsessed with work Do you have no time for anything else? Yeah, exactly right. You have no time. Then even when he's in shul, he's looking at the clock and he's like, oh, I have to either catch a train, I have to be at work for this meeting. And then it's not just about like this meeting, it becomes a lifestyle.
So Steve Jobs comes from Mitzrayim.
Steve Jobs, yeah, I don't know much about Steve Jobs, but I'll take your word for it.
Whoever created the iPhone comes from
Mitzrayim. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also Amalek.
made Steve Jobs, so.
So maybe right.
But also a Molech. We'll discuss a Molech in a second. You'll see why that could be also a Molech. But that philosophy is that when you replace Torah and mitzvahs for being life, and you say, and you look yourself in the mirror and you're like, what is my life? What did I designate as being life? And you can point it to something else other than Torah and mitzvahs, then that's Klipas Mitzrayim. Then you're in the Klipa of Mitzrayim. Because you're Mikot Tzibuch, you're expending all of your energy on that, and you're making that your ikker. And if you make Torah Tafel to anything else, then you're living in Mitzrayim. You maybe think you're in one mirror, but you're really in Mitzrayim. The Klipa of Amalek is something else, and that's what we talked about before. And this is the philosophy which is, like we explained, which is like, I don't need to make sure that you don't come to shul, that you don't spend time at the Beis Medrash, they don't have good chaverim, everything, all that's all good. As long as there's no simcha. You can do Torah mitzvahs, but you should just have no simcha. And we have to be cognizant of these two klipas in our lives and ask ourselves, where's my mitzvahim and where's my amalek? Where's my mitzvahim, where's my amalek? Whereas mitzvahim wants that you should have no life, they don't want you to have a life. They want you just to be working, 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 working. And that way, the life is passing you by because you have no time to live. Amalek says, no, you can live, but just don't live with the real Eitz Chaim. Just eat from the fake Eitz Chaim. Don't eat from the real Eitz Chaim. You just don't have simcha in anything which you do. What we're saying, therefore, is, if we wanted to translate that into the American galus, everybody lives in a different type of a galus, but you would certainly say that the malchus of America is a malchus shel chesed. Right? You have a lot of religious freedoms, and there's nobody standing outside saying, okay, you got to get out of here. You spent 45 minutes in the Beis Medrash, 40 minutes short, you have no more time here. Nobody's saying that to us. We become that. The Yitzhahara does that to us. But there's no cop standing outside who's counting people coming in and out and telling them how long they can stay here. We don't have that type of gzeira. There's no shibud like that anymore. But what a malik in this malchus shel chesed, what it does to us though, is that it says, listen, there's lots of theaters and there's lots of entertainments and there's lots of restaurants and there's lots of all these things. It's presenting for us a poo-poo platter and like a smorgasbord of all different types of what we call geschmacks, things which are great. This hotel, this type of vacation, this boardwalk, this, that. So you have this whole mix of all different types of things which are calling out to a person. Everything is a billboard and it's saying, this is geschmack, this is good, try this, try this, try that. In a hope that a Jew will attach himself to this thing, and if he finds epes achiyas in that, he'll forget about the chiyas he has from davening and learning. Because you can't have it both ways. We can't, if we think that we can have a chiyas from this and a chiyas from that, it's like thinking that if you're trying to boil water for your pasta, and you keep pouring cold water into it, that you're going to be able to boil your pasta. You can't. You're constantly putting out the fire when you do that. And again, we just have to reiterate this point. When we make the choice to have chiyas from Torah, it doesn't mean to say anymore that the chitzonius has to change. In some things, chitzonius have to change. If I'm doing things with ramamish asr, then those things have to be cut out. If a person has an infection growing, you got to cut it out. But there's many things which we're doing which they're not a threat to Yiddishkeit and other rabbis. It just needs a new perspective which the Torah will give, that it's not going to be that Hashem is taking away from us, it's that Hashem is teaching us exactly how to use this properly. It's like a person who's trying to cut his chicken with a pencil. This is not what the tool was made for. You just need to know how to use this properly. It doesn't mean to say that there's no restaurants in my life. You can have a lot, you can have times where you go to restaurants, but it doesn't become a lifestyle going to restaurants. If the lifestyle is becoming restaurant, it's associated with your life, then it's taken away from the Chiyas HaTar and the Chiyas HaTar mitzvahs. And that's called Klipas HaMalik. But it sneaks in a way where you can't even tell. You can't even tell that it's even there. Unless somebody tells you and opens up your eyes and says to you, look, a Malik is attached to you. He's a part of your life. Look at your lifestyle. You can't see it. It's completely under the radar. Whereas Mitzrayim, you see it. You're able to see very clearly, this is my adversary. This is my biggest challenge right now. I can point and I can say, you. When a malik, you can't tell. You can't tell what's taking away your life. Some people, it's more clear. But many people, it's not. And this is why by the Megillah, we find something very interesting. That the entire time, the way that Haman worked is that he's always under the radar. He worked completely under the radar. Unless Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh to know that there was a meeting between Haman and Ahasuerus, and there were letters which were going to be sent out, you can never tell by the way Haman acted that he was an enemy of the Jewish people. Everybody had to bow down to Haman. Everybody had to bow down. He didn't make himself that he was clearly an enemy of the Jewish people. Every Jew he saw on the street, he would say, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? Give them a big smile, everything is good. We just see from the Megillah and we know that he's the evil of all evils. But this is the reason why he's the evil of all evils. Because on the outside, he's smiling and he's happy. He's happy to see a yid on the street. But in his heart, he has the deepest sinner and he can't stand him. And this is what Chazal are bringing out, and this will explain the following Gemara. The Gemara says that when Esther came to the point where she was standing face to face at the suda with Ahasuerus and Haman, and Ahasuerus said to her, Mi hu zeh ve'ezehu? Who is this? I mean, even Ahasuerus didn't know. He was so under the radar, even Ahasuerus didn't know. So Chazal say that she pointed, she said, Haman haro hazeh, but the Gemara says that's not what happened. The Gemara says that she was pointed to Ahasuerus. And then the Malach came and went like this, and pointed to Haman. Because on the outside, you can't tell. You don't know who the Haman is. Ahasuerus looks like the bad guy. Is he not the bad guy? He was the one who signed off on everything. Haman didn't sign his name on the papers. Ahasuerus signed his name on the papers. So if anything would come back, they would say, who put this together? They would say, Ahasuerus put it together. It really wasn't Ahasuerus. Haman was behind the scenes the whole time. So you don't really know who the Hamans are. That's what Chazal is trying to bring out. Even Esther, who had such a clarity, she pointed to Ahasuerus because in the Chitzonius it looked like it was Ahasuerus. But in Pimus, it was really something else. It was really Haman. So Haman has his ways that behind the scenes he's trying to divert our chiyas from ways so that we shouldn't have any simcha and chiyas from the avodas Hashem which we do. So I just want to conclude with this thought and then we'll discuss this a little bit more. So it says Rav Futner, this is the difference between Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, and Purim. Purim, the reason why there's no sheer basar v'yayin on Purim is because we're the people who are in a depression and now we have simcha. And the simcha is not just a byproduct of the day. That is the simcha. The simchas hayom of the yontif of Purim is simcha itself. Whereas by every other yontif, there's something else going on. There's a different nekuda to focus on, and the simcha is just memela. But over here, it's simcha. And that's why when it comes to the simchas of yontif of Purim, there's no shir. Because it's the ikr. And that which is ikr is completely without shir. I was thinking this is the pshat also, just to explain this a little bit more. That's why when it comes to the simcha of yontif, so when it comes to Yontif, we say v'samachta b'chagecha, that it's a chag, and you should have simcha in the chag. But when it comes to Purim, it doesn't say v'samachta b'chagecha, it says yom mishte v'simcha. It's a day of simcha. The whole day is a day of simcha. And because it's a day of simcha, and it's a straight smack in the middle of the month, it permeates the entire month, and therefore, mishenichnes Adar, marvim b'simcha. As soon as you step into Adar, you're already tapped into the Yontif. So whereas if as soon as you walk into Nisan, you walk into an avira of geula, which is why there's no tachanan for those who find it to be a shibud, and there's a whole avira of geula when it comes to Pesach. When it comes to Adar and Purim, the ikar nekuda simcha, and because it's at the heart of the month, which is right in the middle, smack in the middle is where it is, that simcha permeates the entire month, and so therefore, mishenichnas Adar, as soon as you step foot into the door of Adar, you're already marbim simcha. So therefore, if we have to ask ourselves what it is about Purim that we should be highlighting, what we need to focus on, we should halavai be able to bring out. So the ikar nekuda is going to be this nekuda of simcha. Okay, we said enough already. Anything anybody wants to add or to share?
Any connection between Purim and Shmini Atzeres?
Purim and Shmini Atzeres? There's definitely a connection between Purim and Shmini Atzeres in that. It's really more of a connection between Shmini Atzeres and Shushan Purim, actually. But is there an akuda which you were highlighting about Shtam?
Just that there's no Purim? Special mitzvah of the day.
Right, so Purim has its mitzvahs of the day. That's why really Shushan Purim was like Shmini Atzeres, because Shmini Atzeres has no mitzvahs, and Shushan Purim also has no mitzvahs. Which falls into the same trap, why we think Shmini Atzeres is just a day of dancing, you know, for the Torah, just like a minig melma. Simchas Torah Shmini Atzeres in Pnimis Torah is the highest day of the whole Seder from Rosh Hashanah all the way to Simchas Torah. So Shushan Purim is like that. But Purim has its four mitzvahs. So in that way, it's not like that. But there is this element that Simchas Torah is all about Simcha. You know, Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah is that it's not about Limud HaTorah, it's about the Simchas HaTorah. Shavuos is more about Limud HaTorah. Simchas Torah is about Simchas HaTorah. Purim is about Simcha. So there's a mitzvah Hayom, And the mitzvahs hayom are just part of this framework, which is called the simcha of the day of Purim. So therefore, if a Jew goes a whole day, let's say on Pesach, and he does all the mitzvahs, and he doesn't have simcha, so it's not like he was lacking in the ikar inyan of the yom. Because the ikar inyan of the yom is geula, and it has to do with the mitzvahs which you do. If a Jew goes through Purim, and he can count on his fingers all the mitzvahs which he did, but it lacks simcha, you can't say about that it was a good day. Because he did, of course, alpi halach, he did everything good, and it's a gevaldik day. I'm talking about pnimius. In pnimius, a person go through a whole day Purim, and if he doesn't walk out of that day feeling like that he's besimcha on Purim, then you would look back and you would say, you should really do that over again next year.
It sounds to me that what the whole fight against Amalek is the fight of simcha. So therefore the fix, the tikkun of beating Amalek would be the simcha of Purim. But it feels as if that would be the case, it's interesting that we're not really spending time in the simcha of mitzvah. You would think that the avoda of Purim would be, we're davening for 5 hours, and we're dancing and learning.
Right.
And the last thing that we're doing is like, you know, slobbering over the same song and, you know, everyone like, you know, acting in a way that seems to be really secular. So it's almost as if like planting the Eitz Chaim in the base medrash is not what we do on Purim.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a simcha, almost like you have to almost be simcha in the physical world, and then from there it brings you into the world of Torah.
Really what Purim is, and this should be a really good discussion, this really comes to the Nakuda what we started with. What is the Nakuda of Simcha Purim?
Right.
It's obviously very hidden. Because, as we said before, on Yom Tov, it's very clear that there's an avir of simcha. Purim, look at the irony. This is literally a stir mini obey, right? The whole inyan is simcha, yet the whole avir of Purim seems to be just like a regular day, just with like a few things that you do. So we need to clarify and understand what is the nekuda of simcha on Purim. It's certainly something which is concealed, and we need to be megal with that nekuda. But in terms of what you're saying, what you see, though, just right off the bat, is that normally throughout the whole year, if you were to ask a Jew, where should you plant your Eitz Chaim of your life? You would probably, hopefully, you would have a ratzon to say, in the base medrash and in shul. Right? Does the Davin HaMelech say, you know, Acha shu'alti meis Hashem, ois ha'vakish, shifti beveis Hashem kol yamei chaye? Right? David was connected to the Eitz Chaim, Davin HaMelech Yisrael Chav Kayim, right? He certainly ate from the Pi Eitz Chaim. But on Purim, you find something different, because if it was all about the Eitz Chaim, then you wouldn't find that the tzur of the mitzvah was in a way that you have to go out of the Beis Medrash Kimatan Savyanim, out of the Mishnah Gimish Tachmanos, out of the Mishnah Tit Yisuda, right? You only, in the beginning of the day, you start in the shul. Megillah says it's in the shul. And there's a reason why it starts that way, but what you're seeing from here is what? What are you seeing about this day regarding the Eitz Chaim?
There's no shir.
Yeah, there's no shir.
And so it's
bigger than just the shul and the Beis Medrash.
Right.
It's everything.
The pnimius is you don't have to change your life. It's what's in the inside.
Right, exactly. What you're doing is, essentially, if you could say it this way, is that you're seeing that the Eitz Chaim could be in the Beis Medrash and in the Shul, but then there's what's called the Hispashus of the Eitz Chaim beyond the borders of the Beis Medrash. That this tree has roots. The tree has roots.
Hmm? It's everywhere.
Right.
In every part of our life.
That's right. And that's really what the Simcha of Purim is. And this is the difference between Yom Kippur and Purim. Because, you know, Tikkuni Zohar says, Yom Kippur and Purim are really like two sides of the same coin. That's why Yom HaKippurim is like Kippurim. Yom Kippur is really like Purim. But you see that Yom Kippur and Purim are two totally different days. If there's any Avira de Kedusha or of Simcha at all, it's Yom Kippur. This is the ultimate. The ultimate Yontif and Shabbos is Yom Kippur. Whereas Purim seemingly is the complete opposite of that. So in what way is Yom Kippur attached to Purim? So Yom Kippur is clearly the day that you take your Eitz Chaim and you plant it in Shul because you don't leave Shul the entire day. So you're seriously a shifty Beveis Hashem Koy Mechai Degayir that day. Purim says like this, I come from Yom Kippur and therefore I'm going to be mashlim, I'm going to complete the inyan of Yom Kippur is all about. As soon as a Jew plants himself very strongly in the Beis Medrash and in davening and learning, he's starting to have a chiyus from that, then he's fit and he's ready to take that chiyus of the Eitz Chaim and to bring it into the other boundaries, expound the boundaries of the Eitz Chaim in his life.
Wouldn't it be the opposite? Yom Kippur, meaning Purim is the, if you're trying to compare it to something, wouldn't Purim be the base and then Yom Kippur be You're saying the opposite then.
Oh, very good. So the Rishon already says that, makes that point. The Tikkun Zohar says Yom HaKippur means that I'm comparing Yom Kippur to Purim.
Right.
So if what you're comparing it to something else, that what you're comparing it to is even higher. So Purim is really higher than Yom Kippur. And it is higher than Yom Kippur because it's a higher madrega to find the chiyus of Torah and Tefillah, the same chiyus that you find in learning and davening. If you can find that also in other things that you do in your life, that's an even higher madrega. But you can't get to Purim without a Yom Kippur. That's the thing. One of the mistakes which we make is that...
That's the foundation.
That's the foundation. You have to be very strongly planted there. Like, it's very hard to say, to learn a Sefer and to say, you know what, I'm going to go to work today, I'm going to go to the restaurant today, and I'm going to find chiyus in going to the restaurant and to work today, because I learned the Sefer and it tells me to have chiyus in that. It's very hard to do if a person is not firmly rooted in chiyus and Torah and Tefillah. And a person, it could be a very frustrating experience because you really want to do that. You really want to be that yid. And again, it doesn't require that to change your lifestyle. And your well-meaning intention on Hashem loves you so much. And you want to go to work and you say, I want this to be a ruchnius experience. And you're finding that you're always having to revamp and to come up with new cheshbonos. And it doesn't seem like it's going. One of the reasons why it's not successful is because first you have to, like you said, you have to establish the Eitz Chaim first where it belongs. Because that's the essence of a Jew, that he should feel chiyus from Torah Tefillah. You're a neshama. You don't have to make that. You are that. Your neshama delights in Torah and Tefillah. You don't have to try to love learning. You love learning. You love learning. You just have to bring that out.
It almost feels as if like the reason why Purim is the last month of the year, like this is almost like the graduation. If you're working your whole year on putting the Eitz Chaim in the Beis Medrash, and even if you look at the whole history of the calendar, I wonder if like, because everything really comes down to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is Matan Torah. It's the completion of Matan Torah. So Pesach is Matan Torah, Shavuos is Matan Torah. And the whole thing breaks down. So really, Yom Kippur is Matan Torah. So it's really all Yom Kippur, and that's the root, almost like the center of all that we're doing is Yom Kippur. And it's almost like maybe the reason why that Purim is in the last month is because this. If you're working your whole year, then finally you get to go out with the tentacles outside the Beis Medrash and go, I'm going to bring Simcha into my eating and drinking into. But it's not the beginning. It's the culmination.
That's right. You can even say that Yom Kippur, really, from Yom Kippur to Purim, there's really no yantavs in between, other than Hanukkah. Before Hanukkah came around, there was Yom Kippur, which is Tishrei, and if you count 6 months later to Adar, there's really nothing there. Tu Bishvat's not really, what?
Sukkot.
Yeah, Sukkot is just like an extension also of Yom Kippur. Like Sukkot, the whole celebration of Simcha of Sukkot is really a Simcha of Yom Kippur. That's really what it is. It's like Yom Kippur is like the Chasana, and the Shavuot Brachos is really Sukkot, is the Shavuot Brachos of Yom Kippur. The whole Simcha of Sukkot is a celebration of Yom Kippur. There's really nothing in between Yom Kippur and Purim. So there really is like a direct link in the Jewish calendar. What that means is that what the calendar is telling us is that you have 6 months from Yom Kippur to be a shift of Beis Hashem Poy Mechai Dekayid. And if you do those 6 months properly, then you'll really be able to taste like the same taste on Yom Kippur, but you taste it, which you'll be able to taste on Purim, plus. To make that connection with Yom Kippur and Purim, let it be like one stream, one steady flow of shtagging and Torah and Tefillah for 6 months straight. It's almost like Chazal, and this is the way this Purim bring it down. It sounds like, I kid you not, this is the way that it's brought down. But the reason why Cheshvan has no Yomim Tovim is because Hashem says, What do you need now? I just gave you a Tishrei full of yomtivs, all for what? So that I can impress upon you a life of Torah and mitzvahs, of davening and learning. So hey, take cheshvan, I'm not going to bother you with yomtivs. Just sit and learn Torah and daven your heart out, because now you're ready to do that properly. Hashem didn't want to shter our learning and to shter our davening by giving us yomtivs and cheshvan. Now if a Jew comes out of Tishrei like that and he goes into cheshvan, and he's continually rolling like that, and he has a kislev to uplift him with the Chanukah, and he has Tevis and Shvat, there's no interruptions. Hashem's like, just keep going. Just keep learning and keep davening. When you come to Purim, Hashem says, now you're ready to break out and to bring that into your life. To other aspects of your life. That's a real chayrus. That's a real geula and a real yeshua when it comes to Purim. Hashem says, he's saying, giving you the keys, and he's like, okay, these doors were once closed, now you're able to go out and to bring them to other aspects of your life. That's a madriga, though. It's Madriga, though. But many times, we're almost like skipping a step when, and we're very well-intentioned when we say, you know what, I'm a guy who's going to work every day. You know, I'm a guy who likes to eat at this restaurant, and I like these foods. And you sit there, and you're like, I really want to do this Hashem Shemaim. I wish I knew the Kavanas, and Hashem, I just really want to serve you this way. By the way, that's the biggest, most beautiful thing to Hashem, is that Kavanah. But a person feels like it's just not clicking. And perhaps the reason why it's not clicking is because you're already trying to be on the Madriga of the third chapter in the book, when you haven't read the first chapter in the book. Because the first chapter in the book is that a person has to try to find, how can I squeeze more time out to learn Torah? How can I find more time to be able to not feel the lachatz, to have to leave the shul, or to enjoy this bracha and Shemona Esrei a little bit more? It doesn't have to be big steps, it could be little steps, but it's the mentality of, I want to plant myself that Yitzchayim of my life in the Beis Medrash, and in the Beis HaKnesses, and then as a person starts to grow in that, and he has kayach, because he's planted firmly there, that he's able to see that he has enough chias now to be able to expand and to bring it to other aspects of his life. Relationships too, not just work, but other relationships in his life as well.
Just put it a little differently, based on a share from Rabbi Berger, reconciling opposites. So if we have the difference between Mordechai and Haman, Taiv and Rai, Haidu and Kush, and all the stakes that we have in our own lives, we could tap into a higher place of Ratzon Hashem, a place of Keser. That's really what... That's really where the simcha comes from.
Yeah.
We can remove that suffix, that getting rid of Amalek in that sense. We're able to reconcile those differences where you could live in both worlds.
Absolutely.
At the same time.
Yeah, that's a very high madriga to actually do. But the main thing is to have a ratzon, like you said. You know, Keser is a ratzon. The beginning is that a Jew should have a ratzon. If a person's ratzon is strong and he really wants to be there, then his neshama will guide him and will have a siyata shemaya to get there. We're talking more practical right now. But if a Jew wants to know concretely, practically, you know, how to be matzliach in these aspects of his life, so it all begins with a ratzon. If a person has a wrong, strong ratzon, he'll have the siyata shemaya to accomplish it. But just on a practical level, so if a person wants to experience Purim, what Purim represents, and that expansion of Kedusha in his life, it requires an emphasis on the Yom Kippur of his life.
So this year,
and then it'll
bring
to the Purim of his
life.
What?
We needed this year 6 months ago.
Right.
Right. No, but it's not too late. There's no such thing it's not too late. The main thing is to have a ratzon. The main thing is to have a ratzon. There's nothing less of a Jew who comes into Purim and he feels like he's unprepared and he asks Hashem they should have siyata shema. This trick always works. And this is the trick that the biggest tzaddikim use. And that's that imagine the Bar Dichever that he prepared, you know, for Sukkot for 30 days. And he comes to Sukkot and he says, Rebbeinu Shammai, Mamash, I didn't prepare for this. I need your help. I don't know when I'm going to do this Yantav. You don't think the Bar Dichever thought that? You don't think that every Talmud of the Baal Shem and every Tzaddik thinks that every single Yantav that he comes to? You think that he walks into him and he's like, okay, I really prepared for this. I'm so ready for the Seder tonight. No Tzaddik thinks that at all. After all the work and all the toil, he comes and he's machin himself to Hashem and he says, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to prepare for this. This is much, much greater than what I ever thought. Please give me the Siyata Shemai. If a Jew walks into Purim like that, then he's better off than anything possible. And that always works. The best trick in the whole Torah is that trick. But it should be sincere, though. But it's very easy for us to feel that way because we're not the Bar Dichever, so we can tap into that place. Much easier than the Bar Dichever could. He has to work very hard. A real tzaddik has to work very hard for that. But for us, like, we're not Baal Madriga. We know we don't have much. So if we can come to that hachna, coming into Purim, we're going to hear the Megillah, and we're like, I don't know what this means, Megillah. You know, it says the Chayza story from the Chayza and the Sar Shalom from Belz. The Sar Shalom from Belz was a Talmud of the Chayza. He was a very young tzaddik at the time when he came to the Chayza. He didn't spend many years by the Chayza because the Chayza was much older when the Sar Shalom came. So he says that once the Chayza was mechaber the Sar Shalom to read from the Megillah, and everybody was like, what? This youngster is going to read from the Megillah? Sar Shalom from Belz. Who is this guy? You know, can you imagine that the Chayza from the Blin, his Beis Medrash, he had 300 Baali Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, in his Beis Medrash, there are 300 Baali Ruach HaKodesh. So they're calling the new guy in to read from the Megillah. Of course, you don't question the Chayza. So the Sar Shalom gets up there, and he reads the Megillah, and afterwards, he said, Rebbe, like, what are you so about? He says, I listen to the Megillah every year. Never, ever did I hear the Megillah like this. Never, ever did I hear the Megillah like this. Never heard the Megillah like this before. Sar Shalom from Belz. So, we don't know what Megillah means. What Megillah means. Every word of the Pesumi Nisa and the Kedusha of the Megillah. The Chassam Sofer says the Megillah has a higher Kedusha than a Sefer Torah. Can you imagine that? More Kedusha than a Sefer Torah says that has. Yet we don't look at it that way because you could touch the klaf of the Megillah, right? It's all, everything's concealed. But a great Kiddusha needs a concealment. So I'm not a kasha on the Chassam Sefer from the Gemara, which says, you can hold the klaf of the Megillah, but you can't hold the klaf of the Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah is much more Kiddush, written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? And from a previous bigger place, it's not a kasha at all. Just because you can hold it doesn't mean that it's a less of a Kiddusha. That means that the Kiddusha is hidden. And because it's so great, that's why the tzur of the mitzvah is that way. And that's really the cloud when it comes to Purim, is that Purim may look like on the outside that there's nothing going on in Purim, that there's no avira of simcha. But what Purim is really forcing us to do is to tap into a deeper place of simcha within ourselves. That it's the essence of the day. And I just want to talk about what that essence is while we have a few minutes left. I have to text my wife where mincha is because my son has to come.
6:35.
So yeah, a few minutes. 35. So the Simcha of Purim is like this. And in this way, it's very much like Yom Kippur. The reason why Yom Kippur, of which the Mishnah says that Yom Kippur is the greatest day of Simcha in the entire calendar. Again, this is also one of those things which you look at the Mishnah, you're like, what? Yom Kippur is the greatest Simcha in the entire year? How could that possibly be? But the Mishnah says so. The Mishnah says Yom Kippur is the greatest Simcha in the entire year. And the reason why that is because it's a day of Shifts B'Beis Hashem Koyim Echai. That if a Jew is in Neshama Dikayid, then Yom Kippur is the greatest delight. And the Zohar says so. Yom Kippur, the Zohar says, is Yoima D'Asidu L'Sangiba. It's going to be a day where you're not going to understand Pshat in the Torah anymore. Ta'anu is nafshar seichem. That it's going to be a day of inoy. It's going to happen that Yom Kippur is going to be the greatest joy and pleasure and bliss of the entire calendar. The reason why it's so painful for us Yom Kippur is because we're gufniest people, and so the guf is being asked to detach itself from his physical life, and so it's very hard for a guf, a person who's attached to his guf, to detach from gufniest things. But imagine if you're an ish neshama, you look forward the whole year to Yom Kippur. Already Rosh Chodesh Elo, we're already preparing for Yom Kippur, right? The Sfarim say Slichas on Yom Kippur, Rosh Chodesh Elo. Why do they do that? Because they can see in the distance Yom Kippur is coming. In Yom Kippur, you do a lot of Slichas. So already from Rosh Chodesh Elo, Achacham Roas and Olad, they see Yom Kippur is coming, so they start to prepare for Yom Kippur. You don't prepare for something you're not looking forward to. You can prepare for Yom Kippur because you know your life is on the line and because you have to. And that's why you come to Shul on Rosh Chodesh Elo to say your Slichas if you're a Sfardi at 5 o'clock in the morning. Or you can wake up really early on Rosh Chodesh Elo because you see Yom Kippur in this and you're like, oh, I can't wait till Yom Kippur. Imagine that. Imagine a life like that. I can't wait that Yom Kippur comes. Not because my life is on the line, because that's my life. My life is this. Not because my life is on the line. It's the same thing, but two different ways of looking at it. So the reason why Yom Kippur is such a beautiful day is because when your life is on the line and you're davening like that to Hashem and you're pleading for your life comes out. Your life comes out. You taste episodic like what your life is. The taste of what true life is all about. Yom Kippur is a day that Hashem forces us that we should realize who we are, that we're neshamas. And when the neshama comes out and a Jew accepts and he accepts that he's a neshama, then tefillah becomes amazing, Yom Kippur becomes an amazing day. But it's not just you're tasting something which is like part of life. You're tasting life itself. This experience of finding life, because Yom Kippur is really the day on the Jewish calendar, which is the Eitz Chaim, that you eat from the Eitz Chaim. So Purim is also the same. But like we said before, the expansion of that. You can't tell from the Tzura of Purim what it is you're celebrating. It seems like you're celebrating the Nes of Mordechai over Haman, but again, if that was what the whole Nes is about, then that and the Simcha is all about, then that should be no different than Mitzrayim. Different than Mitzrayim. Or any other Yontif. It can't be that that's just what it's about. It's a deeper Yontif than that. So what are you celebrating on Purim? The Gemara really brings this out. What are you celebrating on Purim? You're celebrating on Purim your Yiddishkeit. Your Yiddishkeit comes out on Purim. That's a pshat which the Megillah says. This is how the Kamarna types his pshat. Lehi kahel v'lamoid al nafsham. Come together, v'la'amoyd al nafsham means to stand on your soul, which means that you come to the root of who you are. You bring out something which is so essential, which you brought that out on Yom Kippur. That chayim, that celebration of what it means to be a Jew. If you go back to the Megillah and you ask yourself, like, how did this whole nes come about? It was because Haman wanted to force everybody to bow down to him, and Mordechai said, no, I'm not bowing down. You know why I'm not bowing down? Ki hu Yehudi, because I'm a Jew. Not because I'm a tzaddik, not because I'm a Navi, not because I have a place in the Malchus of Achashverosh, which gives me a tour from doing so. Ki hu Yehudi, because I'm a Jew. And because what set this whole story in motion was the fact that Haman became upset with Mordechai's Yiddishkeit, he made a gzeira against the Yiddishkeit of the Yidden. And he says to himself, I'm not going to just kill Mordechai. I want to kill out every single last Jew. Which means he didn't make a gzeira against a tzaddik. He made a gzeira against Yiddishkeit. And because he made a gzeira against Yiddishkeit, what comes out through the nes is the Yiddishkeit of the Yidden. And the kedusha of Yiddishkeit is so beyond, and it's so great, and it's so high. But that's why Hashem says, if you really want to come in touch with the Yiddishkeit, the only way you could do that is if you drink Ad L'Yada. Because your das can't be masik what it means Yiddishkeit. It's an experience. You can write books from today to tomorrow explaining Judaism, Jewish life, Jewish lifestyle, what it means to be a Jew, but you can't really write a parish on what it means to be a neshama and what it means Yiddishkeit itself. The core essence of what a Yid is. Hashem says to do that, you have to be in a state of Ad L'Yada. And from that place of Ad L'Yada, you can experience what it means, your Yiddishkeit. But of course, everything is very concealed. You can go to one Suda, and the Ad L'Yada matzav there is just Hefkeris and Hoilulus. And it doesn't look like it's anything to do with Yiddishkeit. You go to another Suda, and you feel that there's an Avira there, although they may be saying the same things, doing the same things, but it comes from a different place. That over here, in this place, that they're celebrating their Yiddishkeit here. There's a celebration of Yiddishkeit itself. And the celebration of Yiddishkeit, there's no gvul to that simcha. There's no gvul to that. You're celebrating Yiddishkeit. So it's not just like an aspect of Yiddishkeit, it's not just like the arm. It's Yiddishkeit itself. There's no gvul to that simcha. You can't possibly thank Hashem enough for to have enough simcha to have simcha, a true simcha of what it means, Yiddishkeit itself. That's really the simcha of Purim, which comes out. And when it comes to Yiddishkeit itself, so on Yom Kippur, you bring out that Yiddishkeit through Torah and Tefillah. But on Purim, you extend it to everything else. Because if you're living in that place of Yiddishkeit, then drinking in the bar can also be Yiddishkeit. That's what it looks like at people's houses. You're drinking Ad L'Yada. That's what the people do in the bars all year round. That Hashem says you can even do that with Yiddishkeit. It's not about what you do. It's about where it comes from. But the reason why we begin the day with Megillas Esther is because Hashem says you need a strong Shachris to get yourself rolling. You need a strong Marv. You can only enter into that corridor of the Ad L'Yada, of what Purim is all about, if you walk through the Beis Medrash and the Beis Knesses first, when you have to read from the Megillah and to plant yourself in that Yom Kippur, which is the Megillah's Esther, which is that Avira of Torah and Tefillah, that it should be one of Torah and Tefillah. And when you take the Megillah's Esther with you the entire day, when you come to the Suda, so then you can really experience that Yiddishkeit in a meaningful way, where it touches upon that core Inyan of Simcha, which has no bounds on Purim, which is that Hashem says, take your Eitz Chaim and just, wherever you go in your life, take your time with you. We should be zeichet to that.
I almost feel like the celebration is the ikkar. When you celebrate your Yiddishkeit, that's the var. Yeah. Because it doesn't, right? It's the celebration aspect.
Yeah.
That's who you are.
That's a good word.
That's who you
celebrating
are.
Celebrating your Yiddishkeit.
Right. If you walk into a Suda and they're saying Torah, but they're celebrating their gaiva, they're not celebrating Yiddishkeit.
Or even if they're celebrating nice tires, it's right. Also not celebrating Yiddishkeit.
That's a deeper way of saying it, though.
Yeah.
But so the word is,
how does that come out?
Meaning, I think the word here
say
is,
it.
What is the ikkar of what you celebrate? What are you celebrating? That's an experience.
Right.
Once you have that, that's, right, that in which you celebrate, this is a big Indian in a lot of things in life, that in which you celebrate is who you are. You are what you give chashivas to, what you celebrate. What you value. So therefore, you can tell your Yiddishkeit based on Purim. If what you're celebrating is, I'm out of Yiddishkeit, and now I get a chance to like act like a regular guy, get drunk, and no one can say anything, because am I celebrating that I'm a Yid?
What does that look like, though? I mean, it's like,
I think to Rabbi Shua's point, it doesn't look like anything.
Yeah, it could look exactly the same as that person's Suda. It's just like, where are you coming from?
Exactly.
What are you here to celebrate?
It's inside.
That's
right.
That's what you value. And you know exactly what this is. You can go to one person's Suda, and then 10 minutes go to the guy down the block, and you're like, looks exactly the same, but it's a totally different feeling.
Was that your Vart that you, some recent said over a great Vart, said this, you can be sitting and learning all day? Did Rebbe tell this over? You'd be sitting learning all day, and then a rich guy walks in the room, and you're like, and you could be the richest guy, and you see like a Talmud Chacham, you're like, what are you machshiv? Is that your Vart? You said someone in this world said this recently. It's such a good Vart, right? Like, what are you machshiv? Who are you machshiv? What are you machshiv? What do you want for your kids? What do you want for your life? What do you want for yourself? That's the ikur of what you celebrate. And to Rav Shua's point, it looks exactly the same for the most part.
Yeah, for sure. In these circles, for the most part, it's the same. There's a little Bnei Torah here. Everybody's the same. But no two Sudas are alike. In Pnimius, they're not alike. We should be Zeicha. We just need a lot of Siyat Hashman, Hachna, Hashem. To be Mispa.
I told over your state. Rav Shua had a great line. He said that I told it over to his work. He said that, submission, I'm quoting it right. And by the way, I saw this, that Rav Saul Slanter said that you could if you do it right, you can accomplish more in your Suda than you can in your Ne'ila or something.
Oh, wow.
You see that recently?
No.
Yeah, that's so. I'm gonna mess. I messed it up somehow. But that was the Vart.
That's awesome.
So Rishu had a good line. If I could just say, he said that there's no middle ground in Purim, right? It's the Kodesh Kedoshim. Either you're bringing Yeshua for Kali Yisrael, or they're dragging your body out the rope. That's how it works. There's just no gray, right? This is you're entering into the Kodesh Kedoshim, right? You're drinking and dancing. There's no like, you know.
One of the things that also about Torah not having any boundaries.
You've been there Friday?
I mean, that's literally, Friday, I would assume, why. There's no shear by the same halacha.
How are we doing?
Shkach to you for being here.
Exactly. I mean, that makes, to me, it's goes hand in hand.
Absolutely.
And also the reason why Purim is so hidden, right? The meaning and like understanding why
Daniel
hidden.
So you guys are Chabui mates.
The answer.
Donnie's the one who I call.
I'm the one who's here. What's this phone?
He's the call. And then I look at my phone. I'm like, I lost my phone. And then it's on.
Steve Jobs. It's really the wrong way. He says, it's like a serious racing.